thuds as they hit behind the couch. Everything was silent. I lost awareness for a second, but when it came back, I saw the Carnifex carefully peer out of his cover, stand, and begin to advance. Vigil popped up a second later behind the couch, holding the corpse of an MS-13 soldier in one hand like a shield and his pistol in the other. His suit's upper chest was stained with blood from a hit. Burris fired again and again, advancing on the killer. Vigil's initial volley of bullets ripped into the side of the Carnifex's face and his collarbone. The magical assassin grunted in pain but didn't drop. The Carnifex stopped the Elf Knight's advance with a withering blast of machine gun fire that forced Vigil to dive for cover behind one of the stone Aztec coffee tables. The silent blast of bullets sent drug and booze debris flying everywhere. There was a rattle and a crack as a chain shot out from the corner of the hall and snapped the machine pistol out of the Carnifex's hand. It fell to the floor, out of the hitman's reach, and I heard Gretchen's triumphant bark as Duane ducked back behind cover a second before that whole area was blasted full of bullet holes from the Carnifex's backup pistol, which he had drawn with his still-functioning hand even before his machine pistol had hit the floor. Burris took the second the assassin was firing at Duane to pop up from cover and put another rune-covered bullet into the trigger man's upper back. The Carnifex's defensive wards were losing their effectiveness, and he hissed and staggered at the hit. Vigil dropped back behind cover. "Enough of this," the Carnifex rumbled. "Chuck zam nan sala monte actuya motherfucker sa agunya ah." Every loose gun in the room floated into the air. Bolts and slides clicked and moved into place of their own accord. The animated guns all aimed at Vigil from every direction. He was dead. I tried to stay aware, but it was so hard. And I was really cold. Someone was shouting on a bullhorn, and the sirens were the wail of a heart monitor flatlining. The pain was far away, but so was my body. I made myself feel it. Fought the slipping away, fought the warm comfort of the big sleep. I wiped my face, made a fistful of blood, the assassin's blood, and aimed it at the Carnifex's exposed back, just as he was hissing out the final syllables of his spell to fire the hovering guns. I spit out all the malice I had left in me. After this night, I was pretty much running on empty, so I pushed the thimble full of hate with the last burning embers of my life force. I gave it up. Burned it like nitrous. The hex hit the assassin, and he gasped and fell to his knees. Every floating weapon fell with him. I felt him die as my will, my life, broke his. The Carnifex slumped face first. After a night of drugs, drink, rock and roll, old pain, old enemies being burnt, shredded souls, human sacrifices, and getting death hexed, I was done. Not a bad last night as bar stories go, I thought, with the last sputter of my awareness, not bad at all. "That," I said, "is how you throw a death hex, motherfucker." And then the party was over and someone shut off all the lights. No encore, no sea of trembling lighter flames, only the gray hum of an unplugged amp. Then silence. I was thankful for the peace and quiet.
12. May 1st, 1984. The ride out from L.A. had taken about 3 hours, so the sun was just starting to climb behind us as we neared the beach. "Panama" by Van Halen was playing on the tape deck in Nico's 300ZX. You couldn't find a decent radio station out here, and he had been playing the album to death since it had come out at the beginning of the year. Nico had picked me up at my apartment after we caught the call at around 3. My partner looked pissed, but then he usually did. Nico Flores was half Cuban, half Mexican, and all badass. He was 38, gaunt, with thinning black hair he kept slicked straight back, ever-widening gaps of scalp showing through the combed back hair often reminded me of Rose in a Garden. Nico had a mustache that was Magnum P.I. meets Ron Jeremy. He wore a rumpled Hawaiian shirt that was so bright it could keep you from getting shot in the woods by hunters. Around his neck were several short beaded necklaces, alikis, Santeria charms of protection and power made from different colored aliki beads to represent different orisha. He had a cigarette dangling at the corner of his dour mouth. I knew how much Nico hated working these late-night cases now that Doris was so far along. In spite of his often public and vocal bitching about his family, I knew how much he cherished them, and that he was with the Nightwise in large part because he wanted to keep the monsters of the world away from his beloved wife, little girls, and soon-to-be-born baby boy. This close to the birth, he wanted to be there for his wife and the girls, but most of the things the order needed us for only came out at night. I had offered to go out on the call alone when he picked me up, but he just grunted. "Get the hell in the car," he said, and that was pretty much that when it came to Nico. As we were leaving the city, headed out to the 111, Nico began to tell me about the girl.
"Imperial County Sheriff's Department found her a little after two," he said.
He pulled out a pack of unfiltered Chesterfields, lit one up, and offered them to me.
"How long are you going to keep doing that?" I said. "I don't smoke anymore, okay?"
Nico laughed and put them away.
"Right, right," he said. "You fucking jog now, right?"
I shook my head as he laughed again.
"I run."
"Those things are going to kill you, man," I said.
"When Charles Bronson fucking quits, I'll quit," Nico said, invoking his patron saint. "Okay, so this girl, she's a Jane Doe at this point. Basket Case gave the maven the tip that the death was our kind of case."
Basket Case was a very powerful divinator, a homeless man who wandered the streets of L.A. living off garbage and handouts. He had foreseen otherworldly threats to the world that no one else would have ever seen coming, and he had saved the world more times than you could count. The prevailing theory was that his mind was a fulcrum point, a prism upon which countless alternate realities balanced and tipped. He was hopelessly insane from living with that, but at his core was a decent, selfless person who fought the madness to help the Nightwise. I saw him as a noble figure. Nico pitied him and had told me he wondered why the poor, suffering bastard hadn't offed himself a long time ago. Nico saw the world in such dark tones. It often worried me, but I knew the man under all that scar tissue, and he was a good man, an honorable man, one of the best I'd ever known.
"Your girlfriend wants us to check out the crime scene," Nico continued. "It's a section of Bombay Beach, hot as hell to get to, apparently."
"I wish you wouldn't call the maven that," I said. "It's disrespectful."
Nico laughed. It was a rare, raucous sound, but it was infectious.
"You jerk," I added.
"Hey, she practically creamed herself when you agreed to join the order," he said, checking the notes he'd taken as to the exact location of the section of beach.
He reached back behind the seat and pulled out a large ADC map book and dropped it in my lap. I clicked on the dome light and flipped pages.
"All the rumors and shit about you, kid."
Nico raised his voice to a falsetto in a feeble attempt to sound like the maven.
"Ballard raised the dead. Ballard saved the family from the goat man of Beltsville. Ballard sealed the gate to hell in the house of 400 demons in Iowa. Ballard actually made me feel sensation below my waist for the first time since 1963.
He guffawed. "Watch your mouth," I said. "The maven's a great lady and a hell of a wizard. She'll hear you saying any of that, and she's liable to spot weld your mouth shut. You know most of that stuff about me is crap anyway." I told Nico to slow and pull off the road about 300 yards up. Nico grunted an affirmative. I clicked off the overhead light and put the map book away. The maven was named Gita Templeton, and she was one of the most powerful mages in the world. She commanded the resources and agents of the Order of Nightwise for the entire western seaboard of the U.S., She had met me during some bad business in San Francisco back in 1982 and had finally convinced me to join the order last year. She was a beautiful woman, and I had fantasized about being with her many times since I met her, but I couldn't imagine that ever happening. She was completely out of my league and about 20 years my senior.
"Latham," he said. "At the end of the day, the maven is just like the rest of us, a human being. She gets paid just like we do by the builders to do a job. Wash away all the fancy titles and reputation and stories, and she's a cop like you and me."
"Maybe like me," I said with a grin. Nico muttered something nasty in Spanish and casually flipped me off. We pulled off the road, gravel crunching, as we parked beside the guardrail.
This strip of 111 was dark. You could hear the waves crashing far below. The spring sky and the Beltane moon were masked by clouds. Nico kept the Z's headlights on, and we climbed out. We walked down to the exact spot the Maven had given Nico, making sure to scan the ground with our flashlights for any evidence that might help. On the other side of the guardrail was a steep, hilly, rocky slope that led down to a narrow scar of equally rocky beach.
"How did they get her down there?" I asked. "Throw her from up here?"
Nico shook his head. "No," he said. "The body was placed ritually. It wasn't just pull over and toss her down, plus no tire tracks or footprints up here. The sheriff's department's crime scene guys worked the scene, nothing like that."
"Obscurement spell?"
I offered. I reached out with my senses and felt the fabric of this place, trying to sense any trace of it recently being altered with magic. I extended my perception farther down the cliff over the narrow beach. I sensed nothing. Scene's clean, no magic. "That was one nasty-ass, crude-as-hell bit of magic you just did," Nico said, flicking his cigarette butt over the cliff. "Boy, you can't just get by on muscle. You have got to start working on refinement, visualizations, mantra, something."
"Why?"
I asked. "I've always been able to get done what I want to get done with just power. Workings are a waste of time." I looked over at the dark, choppy ocean. The waves looked angry. "Bottom line, if it ain't broke, don't try to fix it. They didn't do anything that left a trace here." Nico shook his head. "I guarantee every time you've done anything tricky, anything that took some finesse or some serious heavy lifting, you did some kind of working. I'd put money on it. You're a mutt, Latham. You didn't get brought up in one style of philosophy. Your granny started you on her path as a wisdom, but you've learned as you've gone, and you'll keep doing that until you find the things, the ways that work best for you." Nico raised one of his bead necklaces to his lips and kissed it. He then whispered what I knew was a prayer to the Orisha it represented. He stood at the edge of the rail and began his spell. "Bendita madre, padre bendito, levantar les escamas de mi ojo. Mostrarme todo lo que está oculto. Me habla en el lenguaje del silencio y secretos." I was still learning Spanish, but I had to admit there was a poetry to the working. Nico kissed his beads and turned back to me. "They brought her here by boat," he said. "There is a little magical residue from the ritual. It was done down there. It wasn't a summoning. I fucking hate climbing. I'm too old for that shit." As he walked by me, wearing an insufferable grin on his face, he slapped my cheek good-naturedly. "A sledgehammer won't do shit for you if you need a microscope, boy wonder." He walked back to the car. A delivery truck rolled by us on 111. It was daylight now. The sky above the slate waves was flint. We got back in the Z. Nico yawned and lit a cigarette. He riffled through his case of cassette tapes, popping out Van Halen and replacing it in the case before slipping a new cassette into the deck. "If it wasn't a summoning, what was it?" I asked. "It was faint magic. Subtle," Nico said. "Its lattice is already crumbling, and it's only been about 6 hours. I think the magic was a means, not an end." I rubbed my face and watched the sky beyond the water. A flock of seagulls glided and dove toward the water. Their voices were taunting.
"To what end?"
I asked. Nico shrugged. We pulled away from the side of the road in a spray of gravel. "Saved by Zero by the Fix" began to play through the speakers. "I got us rooms at a little no-tell motel a little ways down the road. In a few hours, we meet up with Rosaline over at the county coroner's and take a look at the body."
"Rosaline," I said. "Good, she's the best."
Nico gave me a sidelong glance, nodded, and laughed around the cigarette.
"What?"
I said.
"Nothing," Nico said. "She's here with us tonight at the motel. Maybe you two could go out and have a drink."
"We're working a homicide, Nico," I said, shaking my head. "For God's sake, don't try to matchmake. It's disturbing."
"Nothing like looking at death to remind you why life beats the hell out of it," Nico said. "You're too fucking young to be this uptight, kid."
He paused for a second and winced like he had been wounded.
"Young, shit, I forgot. Sorry, man. How was your birthday, Beltane boy?"
"It was good," I lied.
"You do anything special? Get drunk? Get high? Pick someone up?"
I ran the beach.
I said, pushed a couple of extra miles out, and I got a few chapters read in that book I was telling you about, the Hevajra Tantra.
On your 18th birthday, you read a book and you jogged?
Ran, and yeah, I said. Can we drop this and go back to the dead person, please?
Son, you have got to learn how to live while you got some living left in you, Nico said. Right now is the perfect time to be wild, to have fun, and make bad choices.
So you want me to tone down my magic and blow up my private life, I said.
Got it. Thanks for the life advice. You're like the dad on Family Ties. Ain't adulthood fucking great? Nico said.
Don't worry, I said. I've made enough bad choices already to last a lifetime.
We checked into the rooms at the motel about 10 miles down 111 from Bombay Beach and then drove into Nyland. Nyland was the closest town, about 20 miles from the ghost town that was the beach. Compared to the minuscule population of Bombay, Nyland was a thriving metropolis with around 1,000 souls living in the community. We found a coffee shop to have breakfast and wait for the coroner's office to open. Nico had a huge plate of scrambled eggs with peppers and onions, bacon, home fries, and coffee. I had coffee.
You do all that jogging, you should be able to eat like you got some hair on your balls, Nico said around a mouthful of food.
Because that's a life goal, I said. The waitress walked up. Her name tag said Patty. She refilled our coffee.
Go on, ask her,
Nico said. Patty smiled and looked at me a little confused. Were you this annoying to your other partners? I asked.
They came to appreciate me like a fine wine, he said, or a stinky cheese. Speaking of wine, go on, you haven't tried here before.
Ma'am, I said, my West Virginia showing. Do y'all care a cheer wine? Patty looked puzzled, like she was trying to decipher the language I was speaking. I got this a lot in L.A. My country would slip out no matter how hard I tried to blend in. Nico loved to give me crap about it, and he loved my never-ending quest for my favorite soda.
Is that soda, hun? Patty asked. 'Cause, like, we can't carry any wine or beer here, you know.
It's soda, I said and sighed. Thanks, anyway. Patty gave me a smile, with perhaps a little pity in it. She placed the check on the table and went on her way.
Another county heard from, Nico said. You sure they don't make that shit in a still?
I'm glad I amuse you so much, I said.
Me too, Nico said, grabbing the check. God knows I need a little laughter in my life.
The Imperial County Coroner's Office was like most coroner's offices in the basement of the government building. When Nico and I arrived a little after 9, Rosaline was waiting for us, sitting on a long wooden bench in the hallway outside the office door, sipping coffee from a styrofoam cup. Rosaline Goosen's mane was 5'3" and slight. She had a youthful appearance that made it hard to peg her age, but I figured her for being in her late 20s. She wore her long, thick brown hair straight in defiance of the trend of big hair, and it fell almost to her hips. Her ears were prominent, and she tucked her hair behind them. She dressed a bit like a hippie, in a tie-dyed T-shirt and bell-bottoms that hugged her body in a way that was hard to ignore. An old brown suede coat over her shirt completed the image of someone wandering the hate circa 1972. Her brown eyes peeked out behind wire-rimmed glasses. She stood and pushed her glasses back on her nose as we approached.
Hi, El Rosie,
Nico said and shook her hand. She smiled. Her teeth were a little bucked, but were white, and her smile made her look more like a mischievous elf than a forensic savant. She tried not to smile much at work, but it was hard not to smile around Nico.
Mr. Flores, Mr. Ballard,
Rosaline said in her clipped Australian accent. She had come to the States to work for the Maven. She was supposedly related to an infamous Australian witch and a disgraced English composer who was into the occult.
Good morning. I trust your examination of the crime scene was productive?
Nico shrugged.
A little, he said. We're the right force to be looking into this, so who are we today, Rosie?
Rosaline removed a slim leather ID case from her jacket.
Feds,
she replied. I found my badge, wallet, and the jeans pocket that identified me as FBI Special Agent Latham Ballard. Nico didn't bother digging his out. He had the roll down to a science.
Part of an occult crime task force, she added.
Trendy, I said. Rosaline smiled. We walked into the office like we owned it. the coroner's assistant was a gangly man with tufts of white hair on a liver-spotted pate. His rubbery lips were an odd color that made me think of squid tentacles. We caught him in mid-breakfast, egg biscuit and coffee, so we already had him off balance. Nico did most of the talking, big surprise there. After a few phone calls to check our bona fides, the assistant took us down to the cold room and we got to meet our Jane Doe. Rosaline had her kit with her, a large, square forensic field kit slung over her shoulder. The kit had all the standard stuff and few things most forensic scientists wouldn't carry. The tech clicked on the lights in the lab and pulled the victim out of her steel drawer, an impersonal filing cabinet of loss. She was covered by a sheet with an unzipped black plastic body bag under her. He rolled her over to the examination table, and then he and Rosaline slid her over onto the table. About this time, the county coroner arrived. He was a stocky man in a suit straight out of J.C. Penney. He had steel-gray hair in a high and tight, and he talked and acted more like a politician than a doctor. He wanted to chat us up and make sure we knew he and his office had cooperated. Nico gave him the right amount of glad-handing and then shooed him and the assistant off with a bunch of talk about reports, deadlines, and bosses chewing up his ass. They laughed and left us alone with the girl. Rosaline slid back the sheet and I was introduced face-to-face with Jane Doe. I audibly gasped. I thought I was more jaded, tougher than that, and I wasn't. Nico whispered, "Santa Madre," crossed himself and then kissed his beads. Jane was about 17, maybe 18, my age. Her hair was shoulder length, sandy blonde, and layered around her bangs and face. It had been curled and cut professionally not too long ago. Her face was narrow, and she was beautiful. She looked a little cocaine thin in her features and the rest of her body, but her face was flawless. Not a scratch, not a bruise to mar her features. The rest of her body was a nightmare. Her skin was mottled with bruises of blue, black, green, yellow, and purple, like a savage topographical map of alien continents. She had been cut, narrow incisions with razors and scalpels and deep, ugly gashes with heavy cruder blades. Some of the wounds were fresh, others days, weeks old. Scar echoes, souvenirs of distant pain crisscrossed her body. She had track marks, also of different ages, chronicling her use. The oldest spots were in her arms. Newer ones were in her feet and between her toes. The exceptions were a few ugly bruise marks on her inner forearms near the junction of veins in the wrist. She'd had IVs in both of her arms recently. The slender wrists had some of the oldest scars, white, pale crossroads of choices made when it felt like there were no more options. They mirrored my own wrists. She had been whipped, brutally and recently. Her back, buttocks, and breasts were dull red ribbons of split flesh. Again, raised scar tissue spoke that this was not a new experience for Jane. There were signs of trauma and traces of seminal fluid in the wounds where her nipples had been before they were torn off. Her genitals and rectum were also savaged, torn, cut, bitten, and penetrated. She had been burned with brands, most likely a fireplace poker, and with electricity. An odd-shaped brand appeared on her left thigh. It was an old wound. The perfect, almost angelic head resting on the desecrated altar of her body somehow made it all the more obscene, all the more mad. Rosaline spoke evenly and professionally into a small, handheld cassette tape recorder as she documented the minutiae of each atrocity. She took photographs, Polaroids, 35mm, and videotaped the examination. Only once did I see her resolve falter for just a second. There was a catch in her voice, and I saw her eyes flutter. I thought she might cry, but she didn't, and she continued through all the physical examinations, all the tests and the analysis, undaunted. I could never do the job Rosaline does. 6 hours later, she clicked off the recorder, pulled off her stained rubber gloves, and rested against an empty steel table. She looked haggard. I handed Rosaline a Pepsi Nico and I had retrieved from a row of machines near the elevators. She took it, and I saw gratitude in her eyes for the simple act behind the weariness. "She's had multiple children and several abortions,"
she said. She shows signs of long-term alcohol and opiate abuse, among other drugs and physical abuse stretching back a long time, badly healed broken bones, radial fractures. It's all evil, but nothing specifically occult or ritual in the manner of her death, she said. How about in the placement of her body at the scene?
Nico and I have been reviewing the photos the sheriff's department had taken last night and reading their reports. Her body was placed in a Y shape, Nico said. The sea to her left hand, the land to her right. Rocks were placed around her feet, which were facing east. It feels ritualistic, but I have no clue what mystic tradition.
It could be a psychopath, Rosaline said. An offender with his own internal cosmology and mythology, acting it out on the victim.
Then he's a magical psychopath, Nico said. The real stuff was flying around at the scene. It wasn't a spell to call anything over, but it was legit magic.
I looked at the grainy black-and-white photo of Jane's body on the beach. Her arms were raised above her head, even her fingers were each meticulously spread like... I sorted through the pile of pictures until I came to the one of her feet, the rocks piled around them and over them. Over them as if her feet had been...
Okay, let's see if she can help us any on this, Nico said to Rosaline. You good with that, Rosie?
Of course, Rosaline said, but I heard the ice crack, the hesitation slip into her voice. I was walking over to Jane's body. I felt the fragments of memory shift and slip.
Latham, get the door. Latham!
Nico's voice. I was looking at the deep, savage wounds on Jane's body. The placing. They began at her throat. Then next was a hole where her heart used to be. The next was at her solar plexus. It bordered between the floor of her lungs and the top of her intestines. I heard the door click and lock. Nico adjusted the blinds on the glass of the door to obscure the room. He stood near the door to guard it. He was giving me an odd look, but said nothing. Rosaline removed several bones from her forensic bag. Each was wrapped in a different color of silk cloth. The cloths were embroidered with complex symbols around a circle. The first bone she removed was a human skull. She placed the cloth it was wrapped in on the steel table, on the circle side, up above Jane's head, and then carefully placed the skull on the cloth. She repeated the process. Each bone was human and placed at specific spots around Jane's body. Long bones for arms and legs, and then small spinal vertebrae opposite the skull, at the feet, completing the circuit of marrow around the dead girl. Rosaline stepped around me as I stood looking at wounds. Latham,
she asked,
is everything okay?
I think I know why she's mutilated the way she is, I said, at least in part. These big, serious wounds, here and here, all the way down her body.
Yes,
Rosaline said, standing beside me. Nico was listening, arms crossed, still guarding the door. These wounds correspond pretty accurately to the traditional locations on the body of the chakras, I said. That New Age bullshit, Nico grunted. Look, I said, you are always talking about me visualizing, focusing. Well, I've been playing around with using chakras for visualizing workings, and that book I was telling you about, the one I'm reading, is talking about this. Plexuses of power running through the body. What if the killer wanted to, I don't know, take her power away? You would think she was one of us, a magic worker? Nico said. I shrugged. Not a clue. Supposedly every human has chakras, and they are connected to our mental, physical, and spiritual health. This guy may just want to... deface them in her for some reason.
It's a valid theory, Rosaline said. I've read some works equating the chakra system to the Kabbalic tree of life, so Latham may be onto something here, Nico.
Nico sighed and made the raspberry sound in frustration as he did. Except that there are supposed to be two chakras on the head, right? One at the crown and another at the forehead. He left her head alone, kept it perfect, not a bruise, not a mark. Shit, even her hair is not messed up too bad. Why?
I don't know, I said.
Well, let's see if you can wake her up, Rosie, and we'll see if she was killed by Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, Nico said.
I stepped away from Jane's body and let Rosaline begin her working. Besides a formal and impressive education in the forensic sciences and criminalistics, Rosaline had discovered early in her life that she had an affinity for the dead. She was one of the most powerful and prominent necromancers and necropaths in the world. I watched and tried to keep up. Rosaline took wide, squat black candles out of her case, placed them meticulously around Jane, and lit them with a lighter. She also took a small glass vial from her case. It almost looked like a cocaine grinder. Rosaline uttered something in Arabic, standing at the head of the table, gesturing over the skull and the candle behind it. She sniffed from the vial as she repeated the incantation. I was pretty certain it was grave dust. I felt the power build around her, move through her like she was a breathing window. The temperature dropped in the already cool room, and all the metal drawers of the morgue cabinets began to shudder, as if they were being pushed against from within. Rosaline, her eyes closed, cocked her head quizzically and motioned with her hands as if she were coaxing some unseen force up and out of Jane's still form. The candle's flames shot up, and the room was now arctic, yet Jane remained still and silent. After a few moments of her power surging and crashing against the walls between worlds, Rosaline's hands swept out and all the candles snuffed out. The pall began to depart the room. Rosaline opened her eyes. She looked confused and perhaps a bit frightened. "Rosa, you okay?" Nico asked, stepping toward the necromancer. Rosaline waved him off.
"Fine, I'm fine," she said.
She looked at both Nico and me and shook her head in disbelief.
"Gone. She's completely gone."
"Gone?" I said.
"Her life force, her soul," Rosaline said. "Every single thing she was or ever might be again is gone, devoured. The bastard ate her soul, Latham."
We found the one place to drink and eat at Bombay Beach. It was a dive called the Ski Inn. The food smelled good, but none of us was much in the mood to eat. The beer was cold and the shots weren't watered. I tossed back my second shot of tequila. Rosaline and Nico kept pace with me. The smoky heat of the drink swirled in my chest.
"How is it even possible?" I asked.
We all looked at each other. We all knew the answer. Someone in their life, someone with real power, could mess up a soul, tear it, break it. But to completely remove every trace of a human soul, that took a degree of power and malice that it was almost impossible for me to comprehend.
"We're looking for a seriously twisted fuck," Nico said and raised his beer. "Doubtful it's a Satanist or those elder god freaks. Those guys send the power down a hole. The crime scene doesn't show any signs of that."
He drained his beer and ordered another round of shots.
"I really shouldn't," Rosaline said. "I have to drive back to L.A. tomorrow."
"Me too," I said. "I'm running the beach in the morning." Nico laughed and lit a cigarette. "Okay, kids, one more each, and then you two can go back to the flop, brush your teeth, put on your jammies, and hop in bed. Me, I plan on having trouble sleeping tonight."
"So where did her energy go?"
Rosaline asked.
"If it had been destroyed, it would have bled over into the scene." "It didn't. A healthy, whole human soul can't just be snuffed out without leaving some residue, like those shadows of the people who were atomized at Hiroshima."
"A whole healthy soul," I said, and drained the shot Nika put in front of me. She had been tortured, drugged, raped over a long period of time. What if he kept her and slowly wore her down, degraded her, corrupted her? What if he rotted out her soul before the son of a bitch killed her and pulled it out like a bad tooth? Everyone at the table was silent. Nico had a look I rarely saw. He looked afraid. He buried it quickly.
"That is one of the sickest things I've ever fucking heard," Nico said and downed his shot.
I nodded and motioned for the waitress to bring me another. Rosaline slid her drink to me.
"I thought you were done, Latham,"
she said. I said nothing but downed her tequila.
"If your theory is correct,"
she continued,
"that would mean our suspect spent years working on her, ritually degrading her, tormenting her, The human soul is a paradox. It's fragile, but it's enduring.
Not enduring enough for what Jane went through, I said as the waitress placed another drink in front of me. I'm going to find him. I'm going to make him pay for Jane.
We will, Nico said. We tapped shot glasses and drained them. I was flush with anger, with booze. Something you'll have to be ready for, though, kid, is that it may be a very long haul. Riddle me this. What kind of sick-ass fuck can do something like this to a person day in and day out for years? Focus their attention on a single human being. Provide drugs. Provide everything it takes to keep themselves and this other person alive. Not just alive, but to live in a way that this kind of abuse is never reported, never comes back to karmically bitch-slap him. Tell me who owns a boat to leave his handiwork lying on a beach.
Someone rich, I said. Rosaline was looking at me. She moved her eyes back to Nico when I looked at her.
And powerful often ass drags along after rich, Nico said. I've worked enough of these, Latham. They break your fucking heart. They'll make you weep like a little child because most times there is no end to it, no resolution, and the fucking skell gets away with it.
That's a terribly bleak way to see the world, Nico, Rosaline said.
Yeah, Rosie, Nico said. It is. I'm just trying to get him ready for it if it happens on this one.
Not this time, I said. I'm going to find this fucking monster and I'm going to stop him.
And that is what keeps us in the game, kid, he said. Gets us up out of the bed and keeps us out of the fucking loony bin. Not this time. It's why we took up the brilliant badge.
We drank a final, quiet round. It was 4 a.m. when the knock came at my motel room door. I had passed out with a mangled copy of a Spencer novel by Robert B. Parker on my chest. I rolled over, jumped up, almost fell on my face as the tequila and the gravity conspired against me. I opened the door expecting to see Nico, to hear there was another body. It was Rosaline. She was in an oversized and faded Star Wars t-shirt, and she wore knee socks. Her face was freshly scrubbed, and her eyes were red.
May I come in for a moment?
She asked.
I'm sorry if I woke you.
Please, I said, and opened the door wider. She walked in, and I closed the door. You didn't wake me. I was pretty zoned out from the drinks.
Nico was snoring so loudly, he was rattling the door to his room,
she said.
I'm sorry to trouble you. I've been thinking about your theory, and it's horrible, Latham, just horrible for someone to do that to another person, to ruin them, and then just snuff them out. You'd think dealing with the dead every day, learning the craft I've learned, would somehow callous me, but it hasn't. Death is natural, organic, if that makes any sense. It's part of the universal cycle of learning and unlearning, of growth and closure. This poor girl, what was done to her is the most unnatural thing I've ever seen. It's monstrous.
She blinked, and I saw her eyes glisten.
That poor girl.
I pulled her to me and let her sob into my chest. Her hair smelled good, and she was warm and soft against me. I felt my body responding in spite of myself. We'll get him, darling, I said. Something angry and proud tightened in me. I'll get him. She looked up at me behind her glasses.
It won't bring her back. It won't renew her soul, Rosaline said. Part of the cycle of creation was murdered with that girl, Ballard. The thing that did that to her didn't just kill a human being, he killed part of everything.
I cupped her chin. Our eyes searched, trying to look past, look inside. I felt her body shift around mine, molding to me. She lifted up on tiptoe and we kissed. At first it was gentle. I tasted her tears on her lips. Time became blurry at the edges. We kissed for a long time. Then it became hungry, urgent, tongues finding each other, moans. We bumped into the bed and fell onto it as we surrendered to the relentless need, as we tried to devour one another. I removed her glasses and placed them on the nightstand next to the clock radio I had left on when I passed out.
It was softly playing Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood from some far-off, ghostly, static-filled station. I pulled her nightshirt off, and she fumbled, reaching into my running shorts as we scooted farther back onto my bed. Her breasts were apple-sized, and I ran my fingers over her nipples softly. She gasped and pulled my shorts down and off. I was immutable diamond and yielding silk, and she explored me, cupping and caressing. She climbed on top of me, and her hair fell down like a curtain, hiding our faces as we kissed again. I kissed the tears away from her eyes. She came up, and we both murmured in pleasure as we fell into a rhythm, my hands on her hips, hers on my chest. Wait, I said. Stop. We have to stop. I have to stop. I'm sorry. My hands stilled her hips and her eyes opened. She looked down, concerned.
What is it?
She asked.
What's wrong?
Me, I said. I'm wrong. I'm sorry, Rosaline. I shouldn't be doing this. She rolled over next to me in the bed and kissed my cheek. We were both breathless. Our eyes met again.
I tried to find the right words.
I'm in love with someone. Still in love with someone, and I shouldn't be with you or anyone else until I get my head straight. It's unfair to you. It's unfair to me. And in my head, it's unfair to her.
This is the girl you were with before you came out here 6 months ago?
She asked me. I nodded. Yeah, her name's Tori. Tori Lynn. And the last time I saw her, I said terrible things to her. I don't know if I'll ever be able to be with her, but I'm still with her. I turned on to my side, still facing her. I've wanted you since the first time I saw you, I said.
I wanted you too,
she said.
I hope you know it wasn't my intention for all this. I just couldn't sleep and I was so sad that I needed to talk. I wanted to talk to you. You always seem to understand, to empathize with the plight of the victim. They're not just DBs, dead bodies to you. I think your compassion, your passion, those things are your strength. That's where all that power in you comes from.
I did bad when I was young, I said. I ruined the life, the soul of someone who was the world to me, who believed in me when no one else did. I told her what happened with Granny, how I damned her, how I destroyed her soul and every wonderful, shining, brilliant part of her forever. Rosaline held me tight and listened. She brushed the hair out of my eyes.
So the legend is true,
she said.
Latham, you were a child. You didn't know what you were doing, the implications. You can't blame yourself for that.
I did it, I said. Exactly what this bastard did to Jane. I'm the same as him at my core. I'm selfish and careless, weak, evil and guilty.
No,
Rosaline said.
Far from it, darling boy.
I've been reading a lot about the samurai, I said. Their code, their self-discipline. For them, it was better to be dead than to live without honor. Joining the Nightwise is my chance to master myself, master all that hateful tar deep down in me, to change before it's too late, to prove I can be good, can do good, I can make it right. She kissed me very lightly on the cheek. Rosaline pulled the covers around herself and around me. Alpha Veal's Forever Young was whispering through the fog of static on the radio.
You thought it wouldn't be honorable to be with me, with another woman in your heart and your head,
she said.
You had the integrity to stop even though things had gotten as far as they had. You are a good man, Latham Ballard, an honorable man. You could have used me to ease your own loneliness, and later I would have been hurt and confused by why you were acting cold and guilty. You didn't. Thank you, and thank you for telling me why.
You deserve that, I said.
Do you mind if I stay here with you?
She asked.
Just to sleep, to not be alone.
Please, I said, please stay. I turned off the lights and we held each other tightly, listening to the tinny music on the radio until we slept. My last thoughts before sleep swallowed me were of Jane Doe, lost in all but memory and only a dim shade there.
and the promise I made to her.
13. Thrashing through an opiate fever dream, infection, pain through hot, black, claustrophobic oblivion, the darkness like a coffin too close all around me, my breath bumping against it, the cold silver-biter needles pinching at my elbow joint, in my forearm, on the back of my hand. Brief flutters of awareness. I was in a bed, in a room, not a hospital, not a prison infirmary. Painful daylight stabbing my eyes, making me want to retch. Shadowed night, too cramped, out of sync with the humming cadence of the living world. The dead visit me. Dushan Slorzak crouched beside me. His breath smelled of shit and cum. His body was covered in safety pin wounds. He tells me he's waiting for me in this ceramic room with no doors. The sound of cockroach legs scratching on filthy tile engulfs me. I think I managed to flip him off. August Hyde was there too, pale and bloated from the water, his skin splitting, gases leaking from him, telling me he forgave me for what I did to him. I was a kid and I didn't understand. I'm positive I flipped him off too.
Well, there's a sign of improvement, a man's voice said. I knew it. It resided in one of the uncoupled rail cars of my mind, hidden behind pain and drugs.
He's fighting.
A woman's voice, also familiar, also lost to me in the wash of dying.
He's losing,
a third woman's voice added. It was Dragon's voice, and I knew she was telling the truth. It ends in fire, sweet, acrid, sizzling fire, numbing my lips and razor scraping my throat. I am a speck hanging before the great crimson jewel, the thudding sun full of ancient blood. It burns the petty mortal pain away with transcendent agony. That makes me whole by annihilating every tattered, ragged edge in me, filling up all my festering wounds inside and out. The red is too old, too endless, and too merciless to leave anything alone. Tight, semi-aware darkness again, the taste of metal in my mouth. Time passes, but I've lost all reference to it. My eyes opened. I was awake. It felt wrong, uneven to be so aware. I sat up in the bed. It was night, and Vigil was across the room from me, so still in his chair, in the shadows that I thought he might be asleep.
You set me up, he said.
You know the story, I said. I'm a snake. What did you expect me to do?
It was a good scam, a good fight, he said. I put some of your Cambodian buddies in the hospital.
I'm only chummy with one of them. You never drew your guns with them, did you?
No,
he said, and I heard the pride in his voice.
Tempted, but no. Some of them may not heal up as good as they were. That bother you any?
Serves them right for trusting me, I said, searching my body for bandages, still healing wounds. I appeared to be whole.
True,
Vigil said. Where am I?
The hard limit. Dragon insisted we bring you here.
When did you pick up my trail?
At that club. You put on a hell of a show, by the way, real low-key. The Carnifex had already made you, so I hung back and tailed him loose. So he followed your unobservant ass, and I very carefully followed his. Lost you two a few times, but I caught up.
How long was I out? I asked as I rubbed my face and discovered an unkempt beard there.
2 weeks, he said. They were pretty sure you were going to die. That death spell you did at the end, it did some serious damage inside of you, especially spiritually.
Yeah, I said. I looked at Vigil, started to say something, but held my tongue.
Don't get all teary, Vigil said. You're the job, that's why. You gave me the slip. If I let you get dead as well, I failed my house.
Understandable, I said. You got hit. You okay?
Do us both a favor and don't act like you give a shit, he said. After a few days of you not getting better, I called in the best street doc Ank whose money could buy. He took care of me, but you were still too far gone. Those rune bullets are a bitch if they have your number on them.
Even if they don't, I said, I feel weird.
like I should have drains and tubes running out of me. I feel strangely okay.
Dragon, Vigil said, when you didn't get better after the doc, she called in some of her Nightwise contacts.
Shit, I said. The last fucking thing in the world I need are those jag-offs getting up in my business.
Vigil paused and looked at me. He rested his steepled fingers against his slightly smiling lips, and finally he shook his head.
Yeah, I know how much it sucks to have all these people fighting to save your life, he said. Pain in the ass, man. Well, you'll be happy to know the panaceas they tried didn't take too well. You had too much spiritual damage for the healing magics to do you much good. As shocking as this might seem, they said inside you're pretty much a big empty. Anyway, Dragon sent everyone out, and she did something, and you screamed. Never heard a man scream like that. We heard you all the way down the hall, but you started to get better after whatever she did.
My mind was clear, clearer than it should be, and while I did have bullet scars, they were fully healed. I began to tumble in my mind what I thought Dragon had done to me, and it made no fucking sense at all.
I can tell you're gushing with appreciation, Vigil said.
He held up the USB drive Demir had given me just before the Carnifex showed up.
I had this looked over while you were getting your beauty sleep, but none of Anku's people could break the encryption. Even the best Emerald Tablet hermetic hackers in the life came back with nothing. Perhaps your friend Grinner could take a crack at it.
I sat up in the bed. Excuse me? You and your creepy-ass boss stay the fuck away from him, or I will burn what little bit of a soul I got left dropping both of you. He's no friend of mine. He's business, and he's a fucking asshole. Leave him out of this.
Vigil cocked his head like he heard a noise I couldn't hear or had suddenly seen something that confused him. He raised a palm and shook his head.
He's here. We didn't reach out to him. He came about a week ago on his own. He refused to look at the drive until he talked to you. He said he was under contract. He was very insistent on that point.
I tried not to laugh.
I kind of keep him on retainer. He's the best, but he's an asshole.
You two must get along famously. It must be something to get that initial reaction out of you.
Vigil said.
For a second there, I thought you actually gave a damn about someone other than yourself.
I was sitting on the edge of the bed when Dragon came to visit. She was dressed in an old flannel shirt and bell-bottom jeans. She wore no shoes, and she smelled of wood smoke and wildflowers. She sat down in a chair and folded her long legs up into the chair close to her knees and sat kind of sideways.
You look like you're feeling better, she said, smiling, but I could tell it was her false smile.
When she really smiled, she was like a happy kid, unaware and uncaring of how she came off. This was a practiced, polite smile. I liked it best when she smiled with her eyes, when genuine joy overcame her, surprised her.
The Maven wishes to see you. She said to come by her office when you were up and about.
Swell, I said. Did Her Majesty happen to say what about?
I'd hazard a guess that it's the same reason she usually calls you in.
Well, that's changed with time, I said. First she thought I was her best cop, then she wanted to fuck me but didn't want any of her people to know, and then I was her greatest disappointment and she wanted to lecture me on how I'd fallen.
I'd put my money on C, Dragon said. You were in town for a few days and you stirred up the freaks and yeeks, pissed all over MS-13's turf, and left her with a lot of dead bodies to sweep under the rug, including a gangland Bruja and a fey Carnifex.
Tell her I'll be by eventually when I get around to it.
Suit yourself, Dragon said. Poke the bear.
She looked tired and a little too pale. Why did you do it? I asked. Do you understand what it means for you? What it could do to you?
Hello, pot, meat, kettle, she said, the fake smile slipping a little. In case you forgot, I do whatever I damn well please, and you, least of all people, shouldn't say anything to me but thank you. That was some Mickey Madge bullshit you pulled with MS-13. You lied to me, kept me out of the loop until you needed me to pull your ass out of the fire. Did you even care what would happen to Dwayne and Gretchen, to you, if I couldn't or wouldn't play your stupid game?
I ignored her question. You gave me your blood, I said, a transfusion. Lauren, you only have a finite amount. You don't keep making more like humans do, and every drop you lose takes a little bit of you away forever.
I just gave you enough to let the healing magics kick in. Enough to keep those heart-seeker rune bullets from finishing you off. It's not like it's the first time I've ever shed blood, Latham. Your blood was mostly magic toxin, by the way, did you know that? And your soul is so hacked and hewn, there's hardly enough left to call it that. A soul, a human soul, is infinite, enduring, or at least it's supposed to be, with regular care and feeding. Latham, what have you done to yourself and why?
Stupid shit for stupid reasons. You shouldn't have done it, I said, standing. You're unique. The last.
I don't know that, and neither do you,
she said. Regardless, I continued, you're like a walking museum of unnatural history. The world loses you, it loses part of its magic. I'm dog shit compared to you. A broken down old man with a lifetime of horrible decisions behind him and nothing much of a future. I've squandered my life, my gift, if I had died in that firefight. Shit, there's already someone out there younger, more powerful, with a lot less cosmic baggage and a damn sight more common sense.
Doubtful. You forget your power echoed through this city a few weeks ago when you were agitated. You've done good. Perhaps not as much as you've done ill, but that is not for me to judge. Why have I always been the only one you show this side to?
She said.
To everyone else, you are the cool, swaggering, egotistical rock star. You piss magic potions and eat monsters for lunch, but not to me.
You've seen me fall. You've seen me royally fuck up, but you've never judged me once, even when I deserved it. You still love me, even after I hurt you, after I hurt Anna. You've never stopped loving me, having my back. You were the only Nightwise to stand with me when all the bad shit I had been doing started to blow up. The life will devour you if you blink, you know that. I'm too fucking scared to be this way with anyone else but you, Lauren. I'm a fucking coward at heart.
The bravest people I've met usually were,
she said.
We're partners. That never changes, no matter how dirty we do each other.
No matter how much you've hurt me.
I wish I could love and hate like your kind do, Latham, but I can't. Your emotions are all too cramped. Mine are like storms on Jupiter. You and Anna are the only people that love me, even the completely terrifying bat-fuck alien parts of me, the parts I can't explain to you or to her. You love me blind, and you deserve that coming back to you. You deserved a little blood.
Does Anna know you did it? I asked, looking for some clothes other than the pair of sweatpants I was in. She couldn't have been happy about it.
She was with me when I did it,
Dragon said.
She loves you too. She just hates to see me hurt.
And I did that a lot, I said.
You did,
she said,
but not nearly as much as you hurt yourself. Tell me, do you think you were enacting some kind of penance upon yourself for the things you've done?
For fuck's sake, I said, finally getting angry. You're a goddamn ancient city-destroying mythical-ass dragon, and you're going to try to sit there and make fucking psychobabble excuses for me for how I fucking use and hurt people? Maybe I'm just an immature fuck-up, Lauren. Did you ever consider that? Did you ever consider that I'm no more deep or complex than a fucking con man who swindles old folks out of their life savings or the fucking scale that kills a family for the thrill of it? I was a dirty cop. I almost dragged you down with me, and I might as well have put a gun in Nico's mouth. Silence passed between us, hardening like ice. I'm one of my favorite topics. I've made a lifetime out of getting to know me, and I can assure you that there is no noble heart hidden under that moth-eaten soul. I tried to be that, and I failed. I kept on failing. You were there. You know better than most.
As long as you are alive, you can change,
this ancient, powerful being said to me softly.
It takes will, and it is easily as painful as the decaying orbit of self-destruction you are on now. You have more will than any human being I've ever met, and your capacity for pain is seemingly endless.
She unfolded herself from the chair.